Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Political Party. Today's guest is Gloria De Piero, the former Labour MP for Ashfield, current GB News presenter, former producer of the Jonathan Dimbleby Show and all sorts of things. And this is absolutely electric from the start. Gloria is so funny and entertaining, but so passionate. And there's a whole load of stuff in here about class, particularly around New Labour, and not always positive, and just life. And you just think, even though she says she doesn't want to go into Parliament again, what a shame that is. But this is just an absolutely hilarious hour. And as well as real hard politics in there, there's also some brilliant stuff about P&O cruisers, pina coladas and a whole load of other things. So without further ado, you're going to love this. It's Gloria De Piero. Gloria, you've already had an amazing career and you've still got so much left to achieve. And depending
Don't
on at what
say
point...
that.
Oh, what? Okay, you've got so little left to achieve. Well, what I mean is there is more success to come. Are you ready to retire?
No, but I'm intrigued about the success that's coming. Maybe you know something I don't.
Well, no, I mean, purely based on what you've already achieved, that you will continue to lead a successful life in many ways. And I think it's really interesting with you because depending on when people were first aware of you, you're either a TV person who went into politics or a politics person who went into TV. How do you think of yourself?
So I ended up in TV by accident. The Labour Party was the love of my life. Joined it as a teenager, probably like you. Late teens. I mean, I wasn't that weird. And all I wanted to do was work for the Labour Party. So I ran Labour students in that incredible year of 96-97. And then I would have made the tea for the Labour Party. And I couldn't get a job in the Labour Party. I mean, I tried everything, Matt. To be an advisor, to work for a think tank. Nobody would have me. So I ended up, I thought, well, I love politics, so maybe I could get a job in political television. Isn't that crackers that it was easier for me to crack, like, working on political programmes than it was to get a job in the Labour Party? But I got there in the end.
So why do you think it was so hard for you to get a job?
We love New Labour, right? So let's just put that on record. But if you, and you're younger than me, if you remember it was quite Oxbridgey, the people that worked there. It was, in educational terms at least, pretty elitist. Those staffers were pretty metropolitan, and usually Oxbridge educated. And I wasn't either of those. That's my explanation. Obviously, it could be something much more simple, like I was a really rubbish interviewee.
No, I think it will be the class thing. It's definitely a background thing. And particularly given that you'd had a position in Labour students, which often is the breeding ground for future staff and for future talent. What's mad is... and I'm fully aware of how elitist it was, but they wouldn't have appreciated what an asset you'd be at that point.
Well, do you know what? This is the thing. Actually, I think it was healthy. I don't think it would have been healthy for me to go in there at the age of, 22, after being in student politics. So I think it was a gift. It broke my heart at the time, but actually I think I'm a much more well-rounded person for actually having to get, and lots of people, you know, people listening to this will go, well, you didn't really have a proper job, but it was, you know, it was a job, a profession that wasn't, didn't mean that I was running around after politicians on a journey to becoming one myself.
And did it occur to you at the time, did you think, I wonder if this is because I'm from Bradford and I'm working class?
Yeah, of course it did. Of course it did. Yeah. I mean, people didn't really have our accents, did they? And actually, not really. No, they don't now. It's a real problem, isn't it? It's sort of, I think, because the Labour Party of old, I'm not saying they got to the top, by the way, but we did have trade unions were the sort of journey into sitting on those Labour green benches. And I mean, the weird thing is Labour students, which for people not familiar with it, you will have an idea about what that might be like. But actually, I think that has produced the most working class MPs now. I think about myself, Jonathan Ashworth, Vicky Foxcroft, all came up through that Labour students route and all from very, very ordinary backgrounds.
And was there any danger then? If you're there thinking, well, look, I'm here, I'm bright, I'm young, I've got lots of energy, I'm totally dedicated to the party, as you put it, I'd make the tea for it. That rejection might have questioned your faith in the party or the project.
I think I've only just, as I've got older, I've realised that it probably wasn't me. It probably was all those things. But I'm not sure you want to accept them in your 20s when the world you think might be your oyster.
And then it does, you know, the world was your oyster,
yeah.
and you've absolutely made the most of it. So you work for, was the Jonathan Dimbleby Show your first TV gig?
It was my, oh my gosh, right, yes it was. And actually, yeah, people were really clever on that show. They were much more clever than me. But yes, yeah, I mean, an amazing start. It was really like working in a library in some respects. We would work like to interview one politician and they were long interviews, I don't know, like 40 minutes or something, 30 minutes, and then you'd have a few audience questions. We would prepare those interviews for like 4 days, one interview, and like four people working on one interview for 4 days. And this was before the internet. So you'd be, you know, you'd go to the library and you'd ask for every article that had been, you know, ever written about Jack Cunningham, you know, or, and you would go through it and you'd have this weird process where if the interviewer, I don't know how Jonathan remembered it, but this was the way. If the interviewer says yes to that question, then the flowchart goes to, you will go here. And if they say no, then you go to that. It was like an entire, you know, diagram of a map about where that interview goes, certainly intellectually rigorous. I'm not sure, I don't know. I don't know if it was a good watch.
And would you deal with Jonathan Dimbleby much?
Yeah, absolutely. I know he's really nice, actually.
And was he, did you ever get the sense, because obviously he's from an elite background and it's in, your broadcasting is in his family and in his breeding. Did you ever get the sense that, oh, I'm northern and he's this, you know, privileged guy and there will always be a sort of barrier between us?
To be honest, I think there were some smarter people who were my peers. I mean, you know, you've got to accept it. But that's not really my, I sort of learned that that's not really my strength either. I mean, I'm not stupid. I'm perfectly happy with my, you know, perfectly sort of confident about what my talents are. But a very, very sort of, that intellectual way of doing things, I don't know if it's really my fault. I think I might be more instinctive.
And you worked on The Record as well, which I used to watch.
Oh, my gosh. Wasn't it brilliant? So that's the job I really wanted. Oh, my gosh. The Crocodile.
Yes.
Now that, I thought.
Can I ask about the Crocodile, the Big Ben Crocodile?
Big Ben Crocodile.
Man, that was so cool.
You know, I could not believe it when I, honestly, when I got that job, and that was the show I always wanted to work on, because that's, I used to watch that show and I felt like I was being taken behind the corridors of power. Like people were, you know, that this program was really teaching me what really went on, and I loved it. And so, yeah, so I was at Jonathan Dimbleby for probably a year, and then I spent about six at On the Record, and yeah, that was great, and yeah, couldn't believe it. I was working at the BBC, like bumping into John Pienaar, and you know, John Humphreys, another working class hero, by the way.
And would you? I think we're quite similar in the sense that if you're interested in something, you just throw yourself in. You're happy to do anything, but you just want to be there. You just sort of get the sense that I just want to help in some way. And I don't know if you're the same, but I imagine you would just introduce yourself to people and talk to them, or were you shy at all?
No, I wasn't shy. I'll tell you my real problem, actually, from going to having this love of the Labour Party with going into journalism. I found it really difficult to think of anything that was wrong with that government. I mean, honestly, I'll just put on record, like, my apologies to my editors at the time, Alex Gardner and David Jordan. I literally couldn't. I was like, but what's wrong with that announcement? How could we construct an interview criticising this? It's absolutely blooming marvellous. So that took probably a couple of years to give me some critical thinking, because you know what it's, you know, when it's your sort of thing, a political party, it's not healthy, by the way. I'm glad I've got those critical faculties about it. But yeah, it takes some drilling out of you.
And what were the ways that you found the way to do that then? To ask about how something would be funded, or what is the route in for a new government that's announcing things that, frankly, were very popular?
It was hard. And I think it was particularly hard for me, but I think it was hard for anybody actually in the media, because there were like polls done after Tony Blair had got elected where more people said that they voted for Tony Blair than they actually voted for Tony Blair. It was quite a phenomena. But obviously, you know, honeymoons don't last forever. Bernie Eccleston, all of those, you know, that was the first, like, you know, I'm a straight kind of guy from Tony Blair. When he'd reversed the ban on advertising is that right, on Formula One?
Yeah, tobacco advertising.
Tobacco advertising, that's right, well done. And also given a load of cash to the Labour Party. And there was no connection between these two things, Matt. You know that, I know that.
So thank God for that then, because actually that helped you in your work.
Yes, but I would say to anybody who wants to get into politics, actually, it isn't healthy to just go and work for the party and then try and become an MP.
No, I agree. And obviously then what it gives you is you go in skilled. I mean, when you got elected, you're still a young person, but you'd had all those years in television where you take those skills into not just the party, but into the way that you interact with the media. You've got an inherent understanding of what shows, not just like GMTV, but On the Record and others will want.
Yeah, you might say that, but actually I was a dreadful line giver. You know, when you're put up as a general spokesperson to give the Labour line, I was absolutely, so people in the press office thought, oh, amazing, we can just shove her on question time. And I had to tell the press office, so I did it. I was very average. And I had to say to the press office, stop putting me up for general interviews. I can't remember the lines. I'm not made like this. And I think some politicians aren't made like this and some are. And I don't know which is the gift, actually. To get on in politics is definitely the person that can remember the lines. Maybe put them in your own words. But I found it incredibly difficult to deliver lines which had been written for me in a 70-page document. So I stopped doing that. Despite you saying that I brought a skill set to the Labour Party, it wasn't the one that they thought I'd brought.
That's fascinating, because what is that then? Is there part of you that actually doesn't like to read a line that someone else has written? Do you know what I mean? Is there almost like, these aren't my words, and therefore I know that I won't be able to deliver them authentically?
Exactly. Exactly that. Imagine anybody who's listening saying, right, you're going to do an interview, and if you're asked question A, you're going to say, what's written on page 17? It's really, really hard. Impossible for me. I couldn't do it, and I opted out of it, and I just would do interviews on campaigns that I would, on campaigns that I was personally running, either as a backbench MP or in the shadow cabinet or on the front bench, just on specific areas.
So then people first become really aware of you when you're at GMTV.
Yeah.
And that is, you go from being someone who's basically behind the camera to someone being on camera. What was that transition like?
Right. So I mean, GMTV was Britain's biggest breakfast. It was like an institution, like Coronation Street. And I mentioned to you earlier that, you know, I'd gone to the BBC and suddenly I was like, oh my gosh, it's John Pino. So on my first day at GMTV, I got in the lift I was like, you know, do I go and get a coffee? And they said, yeah, just go downstairs. I think I got in the wrong lift. I'm in the lift with Britney Spears, who's just come off the sofa. I know, but it's just her entourage, me. And I don't say anything. I was, you know, it's a lift journey. It's not very long, but I'm like, I am in a lift with Britney Spears. You just need to stare. It's going to be over very quickly, but you need to take this in. But yeah, it was suddenly like you're going into sort of, you know, the showbiz, you know, take that, you might bump into take that. and obviously all the politicians wanted to come on, Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, you know, it wasn't like bidding for On the Record or Jonathan Dimbleby. It was like, right, hello, when am I coming on? And that was amazing. But also that show was not primarily about politics. So I had to learn. So whereas On the Record, you've got like an hour or whatever, 30 minutes to discuss the budget. It was like, right, it's budget day today, Gloria, you've got 45 seconds, wrap it up. And it was like, but that's absolutely, they were absolutely right. People have got busy lives. We're obsessed. We're political obsessives, Matt. We're weird.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing where I think perhaps you've been a bit too modest about your skills. If you can sum up a budget in 45 seconds, that is a skill. And that is a skill that would help you in politics.
It's a massive skill. And actually, I think there's sort of like tabloid journalists have a far harder job than broadsheet journalists, because summing it up, you know, you have like, you know, whatever, 200 words on page 2 or whatever, as opposed to a 4-page spread in one of the posh papers. It's a massive skill to do that.
Also,
but the 70-page document, Matt, wasn't written like 45 seconds in GMTV.
Yeah, but so, then they both have their place, don't they?
Well, yes, they do, but not in the way that politics operates. I assume it's still the same now in all parties. This is the briefing document. Get it in your head. It's going to go into the top and come out of your mouth. It's like, what? How's that going to work? It didn't for me.
You know, if you ever pushed back, would people say, look, I know it's daft, but this is just the way it is?
Do you know, I'm going to give you, I'm going to pay tribute to Margaret Hodge here. So, Margaret Hodge, thank you. So I'd done 2 question times. They were average. The first one was all right. The second one was worse because I tried to be, remember more of the 70-page document. And I was doing any questions. I don't know why I'd put myself through another one. And Margaret says, oh, come up to my office and let's talk about it. And I went, so, okay. And whatever the news story of that week was, she went, what do you think about that? And I went, what do I think? She went, yeah, what do you think? And I was like, well, I think this. She went, well, say that then. And I was like, but that's not like on page 25. She was like, it's broadly the same. Just say that. And I was like, oh my gosh, Margaret Hodge, thank you. You liberated me. And I did quite a good any questions, but I just thought, you know what, quit while you're ahead on this. But the Margaret Hodge method, everybody's going to be knocking on Margaret Hodge's door now.
But that surely is the way to prepare someone for something like that. That's the easiest way in, is to say, what do you think? And then either just modify that a bit to be on message.
Matt, if we could achieve that as a result of this podcast, I think we would be the biggest, I think politics would thank us forever. And so would viewers and listeners, actually.
Is this the sort of, obviously, you're a consultant now at Woburn Partners. Is this the sort of thing you would do if you were, advising a politician? Is that the sort of advice you would give them? Is that the sort of thing you do?
I talk about the Margaret, I've not talked about it sort of publicly, but to my mates and to other politicians, I talk about the Margaret Hodge method all the time. It's interesting, actually, because I do also some part-time work at Woburn. But me and somebody else who has been on your podcast, Rob Burley. So me and Rob, by the way, we started at Jonathan Dimbleby at the same time. We were both researchers. Yeah, and we have talked about this quite a lot and had sort of tentative discussions about, imagine if we could devise like a media training program where we could teach people to be themselves, the best versions of themselves. Yes. And we keep having these conversations and we haven't done anything about it, but I might watch the space on that because I sort of was joking that the viewers and listeners would be grateful if people could learn to be themselves. But actually, it's a serious point. You know, it's not just politicians. It's everybody's learned from the political way of doing things, like business people. You know, everyone thinks that's the model. It's terrible.
You see, even in football punditry, and they've started doing this hand signal now when they're talking about like the ball popping around the midfield, and they're doing the politician point that Ed Miliband was doing 10 years ago.
I know. Do not. It's honestly the worst type of communication. And oh, if me and you aren't going to stamp it out today with the help of Margaret Hodge, then maybe me and Rob Burley will have a go.
Did you ever feel that perhaps you weren't being yourself, or that there was like politician Gloria, or has there never been a difference between effectively the way you talk publicly and privately?
Only on that second episode of Question Time that I ever did, when I was awful. I didn't screw up, I didn't get the lines wrong, but I was probably like, I can remember this, Gloria, you can remember it. I think it's on page 5. So that probably wasn't a great watch. But I think after that, I just thought, I'm not going to do this. This is me. I've got there are some things that I'm not brilliant at, and there are other things that I am. So lean into what you're good at and maximise that.
And did you ever feel during your time as a politician that, oh, I might have to change to get on, and either I am or I'm not prepared to do that?
I wish I'd never got on. And I think that most politicians, I don't know if it's most actually, but I have conversations, my friends, my closest friends, are often, you know, sometimes big people in the Labour Party. And we talked then when we were colleagues, and we talk now. And I think you don't need a job. It's very restrictive. You can do so much. And I'll give you an example of this. He's not a Labour politician. Robert Halfon, he was like a big figure talking about education and social mobility and petrol tax, fuel duty, I think is the formal word. and then he became a minister, 18 months ago. And I've thought about Robert Halfon quite a lot. And I'm like, I bet you were sad. Mm-hmm. I bet you sad, because you had so much to say. It was really interesting. You could think for yourself. And I think people become trapped when they do get on. Some people love it and it's worth it all. But I think some people would be much happier on the back benches. And your voice, Stella Creasy's voice, has the most amazing power. And she's on the back benches.
And how do you feel about class and Labour now? I mean, if you look at Labour's front bench, obviously Keir's from a working class background, Angela Rayner, Wes Streeting, many, many more. Do you feel like Labour is rebalancing itself regarding class now?
That's a good question, Matt.
Thank you very much.
And you have...
There's a 70-page document that went into thinking of that question. I've got a flowchart on the wall.
That's a really good point. Really, three of the most incredible people in that shadow cabinet are from working class backgrounds. That's good. It's not enough, I'll tell you why I still think there's a little bit of a tension. After 2019, so many people from seats like mine, what I would call working class seats in towns, were wiped out. And actually, the Parliamentary Labour Party has fewer of those voices just because there aren't that many people there. And I just think, and I think they are doing, but you've just got to be mindful of that. So when you're in your part, so every Monday, all MPs meet and a member of the Shadow Cabinet talks, and it's quite open and it can be quite, you know, there is room for debate in those meetings. But I always think, gosh, everybody, pretty much everybody there is from a city. And it gives you a different perspective. Most cities, this is a massive, massive generalisation. People think their best days might be ahead of them, or their city's best days might be ahead of them. In towns, in my experience, a massive generalisation, they think their best days were behind them. And so it's just as important. It's incredibly important for the Labour Party to tell a story to those communities who abandoned us at the last election, why and how we are going to ensure that those towns' best days are ahead of them.
And is that something that's picked up in polling? That feeling, that thing about cities and towns? Or is that an observation?
Well, I learned so much from Ashfield. I learned so much from Ashfield.
So Ashfield was your constituency, North Nottinghamshire, next door to, well, it borders the Mansfield constituency, the Sherwood constituency. It's a coal mining area. And you come down from Bradford. So northern, but again, Bradford's not Ashfield.
They didn't like it. They didn't like it at all.
So what, unfair, they think you were from sort of a million miles away?
Well, I thought, well, actually, I'm from London at this point, but I won't say that. I'll say I'm from Bradford, even though I didn't live in Bradford, but I didn't like that either. 192 was my first margin of victory, Matt. And I'm not saying that was just because I wasn't from Ashfield, but it didn't help.
But then you obviously learned so much being there. So how does it differ from Bradford? Because people would look at Bradford and say that's an area that's had its challenges in so many ways. But would you say Ashfield's were more acute, or that they're just different?
I'd say they were different, actually. Sort of statistically. So more people, home ownership will be higher. People are older. The wages are lower, not just in the region, not just in the national average, but the regional average. Those jobs that used to exist there, the mines, and there was massive textiles there as well. Pretty Polly was there. So it was possible to leave school and have a job where you were well paid, probably had a trade union. Well, you definitely did in the mines. There was status. And there are fewer jobs with less status. Nobody has tackled that. Also, people who go to universities is in those towns, seaside towns, post-industrial towns, far fewer 18-year-olds will go to university than certainly Bradford.
So you were elected in 2010, is... Obviously, Labour lose that election, but you come in.
Yeah, I thought that was the low point, Matt.
How hard was it to campaign in a seat like Ashfield? I know you won, but when you looked around somewhere like Ashfield, how hard was it to defend Labour's record there? Were you still... Because obviously, I mean, we'll come on to Lee Anderson.
I forgot. I was thinking, what's he going to ask me? Of course you're going to ask me about Lee Anderson.
Well, no, but I had him on the podcast a few months ago. And I was saying to him, you know, when you were a Labour councillor in Ashfield, the NHS was getting record investment, so were schools, the minimum wage, tax credit, sure start, all, you know, reeled off all the stuff that new Labour people can reel off. And he counter with PFI and stuff. But I just wonder, and I knew this from campaigning in Sherwood when I worked for Paddy Tipping, sometimes you would campaign in some of those mining areas where the centre of employment hadn't been replaced, and she's got these estates just on their own. The hardest people I found to knock on the doors of were single men, because they'd say, all the stuff you're doing is targeted at families. I don't use the NHS. What have you done for me? And I just wonder if in Ashfield, as great as we agree Labour's record was, perhaps in areas like that, it was a bit harder.
Yeah. So the wealth that was created, it wasn't distributed evenly. But also, I'll tell you what, because I remember that 2010 election. I remember a lot of the conversation. I was door knocking pretty much every week from 2010. So in 2010, the reason why they didn't want to vote Labour was they thought we were too generous with people who didn't work. And they thought we had let too many immigrants in as part of the EU. Well, of course, it was free movement. Those were the two things. Now, that changed quite quickly, actually. You know, within a few years, they weren't that, and certainly by the time I'd gone, those two issues weren't really coming up at all. But those were the things that were creating anger when I first stood in that election. They thought, there's people down there, and they haven't worked, and I'm struggling, and they seem to be all right. And then, of course, free movement, which they felt was depressing their wages.
And do you think, with regards to benefits and things, that people had a point? Or do you think they were just, after 13 years in government, you're more susceptible to those sorts of attacks? And, you know, this was effectively a highly effective Tory and tabloid messaging rather than a reflection of reality.
No, I would give people more credit than that. I think the British people they're always right. And frankly, if anybody thinks they're wrong, well, you're not going to change them. So I found the doorstep. I was the most in touch with Britain that I've ever been in my life throughout those 10 years. I genuinely and sincerely am more out of touch because I do not knock on doors every week. I just knew what people thought. And now I don't. And it's a pain in the backside. You know, it's like, you're like, oh my God, we're going canvassing again. But it's the greatest privilege to have that insight.
You could just go door knocking on your own, couldn't you? Just see what people
I did a bit in Bolsover for the wonderful Natalie Fleet the other week. It was actually all right as well, which is a former mining area. Dennis Skinner used to represent it. Of course, you know this, Matt. We went on a stay and there were, you know, a few 2019 Tory voters who had previously been lifelong Labour who were coming back. So, good.
That's interesting.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So let's talk about Lee then. As I say, he was on the show a few months ago. Then he got himself into a lot of trouble, which had not happened in the past. But you both are obviously on GB News now, and I know your politics are very different, but is there something in the fact that you both were Labour people in Ashfield and
you then end up... but carry on.
But the Labour Party in different ways drove you both away. I mean, it didn't drive you fully away, but I guess what I'm getting at is you can see why he left. So why didn't you go to the extreme that he did?
Well, I don't say it's... I mean, I know why he says he left, but, I mean, if... You know, the way I think about these things is clear. If your party... By the way, Lee had been a member of the Labour Party since he was 16, new to elected office. He'd only been a councillor for a couple of years, maybe 3 or 4, but not very long. your party, you have a set of principles, and you know, you join a party that most reflects them, if you're weird like us. And your party will go through ups and downs. And it's my view that no matter, that your job is to argue for your sort of kind of Labour in the Labour Party. Now, I have never, so I joined in 91 or 92, I've never voted for a winning Labour leader. Never. I know.
Oh, God.
Never, Matt. Never.
Hang on.
So obviously, 97. I've got really good.
Hang on. Oh, what? Do you mean in the internal leadership?
No, election? I didn't even vote for Tony Blair.
Beckett.
I voted Beckett.
Okay. I get that.
You know, I was on the left of the, you know, I'm young, I'm on the left of the party. I think I might have stood outside some hustings saying, you know, I can't stop Blair or whatever.
No way.
Yeah.
So were you?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't just brush over this. So were you like a capital S socialist when you first joined?
Oh, yeah. I massively flirted with the Trots.
Yeah.
Massively. I just thought it was more interesting, you know, more radical, better ideas, bigger ideas. I mean, it lasted about maybe 3 years. So it was knocked out of me before I'd left university.
It's so funny that, because I joined the SWP when I was young.
Did you?
Yeah.
Matt, are we the same person?
I know, this is so mad. But I was the same. I was like, you know what? And I liked Labour, but I was like, these people are like so passionate and they're out there, they're exactly. doing it. Do you know what I mean? You're like, well, that is really attractive.
To exactly.
Basically, vulnerable people. i.e. young, do you know what I mean? But that's why I understood why some people got whipped up in the Corbyn things. You're like, well, I'd kind of been there as a young
person.
Yeah,
that's very generous, actually. Yeah, you're right. We had been there. We'd 20, 19-year-old Gloria and Matt, we'd have been back in Corbyn, wouldn't we? Without doubt.
Maybe, yeah. God, what a thought. But I always thought Blair was amazing. So like, I joined the Labour Party when I was 15. So is
Matt.
That sad?
Matt,
don't you tell me I'm sad when you're like campaigning against the greatest prime minister this country's ever had.
I know. It is a source of shame to me. There is a picture of me and him in my kitchen. I mean, sorry.
You throwing an egg at him?
You are.
Is it you throwing an egg?
No, I'm looking admiringly as I should have done from the moment that I joined the Labour Party.
So 94, you vote for Beckett.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was no leadership election when Gordon Brown became leader. Although John McDonnell was trying to get constituency nominations, I seem to remember. And then you vote for...
And I voted for David Miliband. Okay. I think I should have voted for Andy, but we don't need to go over that.
I voted for Andy.
Do you know what, Matt? You were right. My heart said Andy was the right person. But Alan Johnson, who I really love. Have you had Alan Johnson on this?
Oh, of course.
I mean, he's a legend. And he was like, you're wrong. You have to vote for David. And I was like, oh, Alan, you're like a god. So I voted for David, but my heart was with Andy.
But now I should have voted for David. So like, we basically cancelled each other out. So that's fine. So then
I went to vote for Liz.
Yes, I voted for Liz.
Yeah. All right, okay. And then you would vote for Keir. I voted for Lisa.
I'm not a member of the Labour Party anymore.
What?
I left the day Corbyn became leader.
Well, I mean, what's the excuse now? He hasn't been leader since 2019.
I just don't think I could ever join a party again.
Matt, this is like, I need to interview you. What is going on?
Well, I just think I can still support candidates and I can still vote Labour, but getting involved again, I just think, oh my God.
Don't you miss those begging letters for a fiver every day in your email inbox?
I still get them. I still get the emails. And I still ignore them. But I just don't think I could join a party again. I just don't think I could.
It would be Labour.
Labour would be the only party I would join.
We need to have a serious conversation, Matt. Like, we don't have time to discuss this now. I'm trying to save your podcast, but we need to take this offline and talk about why you're wrong.
Really? You think I should join?
Yeah. you've got, if we're talking about like how you fight for your principles and the sort of Labour Party that you think is will be in touch with the British people, you get a vote. I mean, mine has never amounted to anything.
Yeah. Mine's always been cancelled out by your flipping one. And the
right,
other
so
way around.
So me and Lee are very, I never thought for one second, not one millisecond, did I think about leaving the Labour Party.
Okay. Not even at the nadir of the call.
No, it's my party. I'm not leaving.
Okay. So where do you, why am I not as tough as you? I realise that's maybe a question about me, but where do you get that resilience, that toughness from? That stamina?
Oh, no, it was miserable, Matt. It was miserable. I put on a stone. You know, it's like some people say the baby weight. I call it my Corbyn weight. But, I mean, cause honestly, the Parliamentary Labour Party, we were just all like, I don't know, just like eating and drinking a lot, and drinking too much. It was really tough.
Okay, so then, just on a personal level, do you realise, actually, my health is now deteriorating as a result of this, and I need to do something about it?
No, I just drank a lot of Chardonnay.
I mean, it doesn't sound bad. Sounds great.
You know.
Chardonnay socialist.
You know what? He's a nice person on a human level as well. I could have chatted to him in small talk for till the cows come home.
But, Corbyn?
Yeah. He was very easy to chat to.
Yeah. But obviously politically.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. Didn't work out too well.
So then you decide not to stand in 2019.
I did, but I would have lost.
Okay.
To my former caseworker, but that's not mine.
Yeah, how did you feel about that?
Well, I was never going to stand in, but I'd had enough by then. And I'm so pleased because some of my friends were heartbroken. They hadn't had enough and they were heartbroken, you know, to stop being MPs. But I'd had enough.
But some people stand because they know, look, I'm going to lose, but I get the payout.
Yeah.
So you did a really honourable thing in not standing, even though, because the net effect is the same. You stop being an MP at that election.
Yeah.
But you, you don't get the same amount of money afterwards.
No, you don't. And going back to the original point, thank goodness I did have a skill. Because it's not, I think some people think MPs can walk into a job. You can't. Not if you've done the, I worked for an MP, I worked for the party, then I became an MP. It's tough.
A handful. And they tend to be the people who are at the top anyway, will get consultancy jobs or whatever it is. But you're right. I mean, tons of MPs lose their jobs and then what value are they?
Well, indeed. And I actually think it's quite unfair because you do learn some skills in there.
Yeah. So you stand down. How did you feel when you saw Lee win? Did you feel a little bit, at least I know him kind of feeling?
I felt very sorry for the Labour candidate who is a personal friend. Obviously, I hadn't spoken to Lee for some time. And I saw his maiden speech. And it was good. And I messaged him to tell him it was a good maiden speech. I got on with Lee. I think the representation of Lee is somewhat of a caricature now. He can be very funny. He can be very good company, can be clever. And I liked him, but obviously that's the level of friendship that we had then. We don't have now, but I have.
Okay.
I talked to him. Of course, I talked to him. And do I still, you know? And I don't really hate anyone. Do you know what I mean? I don't bear animosity. People make their own decisions, and live with those decisions.
Was he a good member of staff?
Yeah. Tell you what, he canvassed. He was out. I told you I canvassed every week. There was not a canvass session he would miss. Not a canvass session.
It's
the truth.
So I guess the place you're going to see him now is, do you bump into each other in the corridors?
No, but sometimes I do bump into him occasionally. I mean, once a month or something, or I'll see him at Tory Party conference when I'm working. And, you know, I'll go up and say, I haven't spoken to him since reform. because I haven't bumped into him since reform. But I actually, on a human level, because you know what, I know what Parliament's like. I think you have friends in your respective parties. It must be quite hard. It can be. I mean, Lee wouldn't. God, if Lee, because nothing's tough for me, Doug. That's what he'd be saying. But I just know that that place, you have your tribes and you have your tribe within your tribe. And if there's only one of you, I suspect it could be quite lonely. But Lee is, as you know, a tough character. So he might be all right.
Do you get a hard time from people, from Labour people, for being on GB News?
No. I mean, there have been some moments when it's like, what the... And I go, you know. But, I mean, at the beginning, I used to have to beg my mates to come on. I mean, the Shadow Cabinet are all over that channel. It's just the truth, but it was hard at the beginning and I'd be calling in personal favours, but I just don't have to do that anymore. The Shadow Cabinet get that. And I'm so pleased that they get why they have to be on it, because people come up to me. It's quite weird, actually, because when I was at GMTV, people came up to me, but it was a massive show. And this is a news channel, and news channels do not have those sorts of numbers. But people come up to me quite regularly and talk to me about GB News, and I always use them as a little focus group. They've all got Labour voting history. Mm-hmm. All a bit fed up now, but they're worth, and they don't tend to live in London. But I'm up in Bradford a lot. I go on quite working class holidays. I just like going to Torremolinos and on P&O cruises. I don't know if you get any money from me saying P&O cruises.
Well, you might. You could be on the next advert.
But it's quite remarkable. And they're all from, you know, they're from those towns that we were talking about. And they love it. And they're just normal people. You know, it's just, if you think about news, right, news channels, which were like massive deal 30 years ago when they launched, we'd never known anything like it. It's like, oh my God, this new, it just goes on forever. It will never stop. But it hasn't really changed in 30 years. Yeah. And actually, what I would say is that, of course, we have news bulletins where it's like, and now we go to the High Court. But then it's like we discuss and debate the news, and I think it's healthy. And there's obviously demand for it.
Well, that's what's fascinating is when it first launched, people were desperate for it to fail. And it obviously had lots of technical problems and things like that.
Yeah.
And people thought it had failed. But then actually it hasn't. It's been a huge success. So what do you think is behind the success? Is it that it's doing news differently? Is it that it's a bit more provocative? Like what's the reason that it's done so well?
I think it's because news isn't something that happens to us. It's something that affects all of our lives. So it's not, I think people are tired of that model where it's just like, now we cross to our correspondence. It's boring. Yeah. Of course, there's a place for it, but it's boring if that is your whole model. But our whole model is debate and discussion. I mean, when me and Chris Hope, lovely man, lovely, lovely man.
Chopper.
We present our... Chopper.
Love
we
him.
Present our... Yeah, he's so great.
What a gentleman.
Such a kind human.
Oh,
I know.
Man. He's such a lovely guy.
So when we launched our PMQ show, we have good guests on. Every week we have Shadow Cabinet, Cabinet level. Front bench, at least, or Stella Creasy, because she's amazing, so she can count us on that level. But we just get the viewers and listeners, because we're simulcast on radio, to send in their questions. So we don't think, it's not about us being clever dicks. It's not the Jonathan Dimbleby model. We just ask them those questions, so they can't prep, we can't prep. And, I mean, we ended up knighting Alan Bates on the first show, Esther McVeigh and... We launched just when the post-office scandal had really broken, when Mr. Bates' drama was, when the ITV drama was on. And somebody said, should Alan Bates be knighted? Now, me and Chris wouldn't have asked that. Now, of course, Esther McVeigh, Annalise, they have no time to sort of check the line. So they both end up having to say yes, because how can you not? So, yeah, we knighted Alan Bates in a GBU studio.
And is that a fun place to be?
So I tell, yeah. And I think it's quite, so obviously there are, most people don't really have politics. They're just sort of professional broadcasters. I would say that sincerely. But people who have different politics to me, it's actually quite interesting. It's quite healthy, because even when I was an MP, I would only have sort of cursory conversations with Tories. I would never antagonistic. I'm not that sort of person. I didn't really have friends from across the chamber or have drinks with them. But it's actually quite interesting and quite good for you to challenge yourself, because obviously all my mates are Labour, so you end up having the same conversation. You go, yeah, yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah, right, yeah. But if someone says, well, I don't agree with that, it's like, let me test my argument here. So I think it's healthy. It could all be, you know, if you could do that with the with the nation, if you could have done that with the nation during Brexit, it would have been so healing. But anyway, it's been good for me on a human level to talk to people who with different views from me, and I think we should all do more of it, quite frankly. It's healthy.
And do you think, I mean, we're recording this on the day that the CAS reports come out, do you think enough people in progressive circles have done that on the gender issue and on the trans issue, that there just seems to have been, this is the left-wing view on it, and people, yeah, perhaps fear of looking like a bad person, have not, yeah, challenged a lot of the thinking, and now the, yeah, consequences of that have really been shone on.
Oh, gosh, Matt, that's a big question. I've always thought on this debate, because it's got to be like a sort of middle solution on this. I can't be, I mean, if it's like about prisoners who've, you know, then like have a separate wing, I don't know. There must be, people travel to space. We must be able to figure this out where there's some kind of consensus, and there's been no consensus, and the debate on this has often become toxic. But I find it possibly easier to see other people's points of view. Some.
Part of the reason I ask is I wonder about Labour and gender. It's never elected a female leader.
It's so embarrassing, isn't it? How can it be?
Especially when the Tories have had three. I mean, every other party has had a, you know, terrible.
Rachel Reeves, what an absolute phenomena. She's at the top of her game right now, I think. I've known Rachel since I was about 18.
And has she changed much?
I mean, obviously she's not 18 anymore, but I just think she's always had this fierce intellect. But I just think, do you know what? Your speech at party conference last year, your TV interviews, you're at the top of your game. I was saying that to my husband last night, and he went, because you forget about this, and he went, yeah, you're right, but you know, like, it's going to be really hard being Chancellor, because of course, like, on that night when you win, you're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, I can change Britain, and then in 6 months everyone hates you. And it's not very nice, really, is it?
Well, how are you going to feel at the next election then, not standing?
Oh, well, this is the second time I'm not standing.
I know, but you'd just finished, so you're ready to go at that point.
They'll be in government, yeah, and there's probably going to be a Labour government. Well, no, it's not. I'm happy. I loved it most, and I really sincerely mean this, because I learned about Britain, because I'd never lived in a town. Just big cities, Bradford, Birmingham, London. That's not Britain. So I am so pleased that Ashfield taught me what so much of Britain is really like. But that's really what I take away from it. It's not like I stood on the green benches and asked a really good question, or I made a really powerful speech. I mean, what is the point in making speeches and then you're not going to change anyone's mind?
But you know, you don't feel like, oh man, I this is what I have been fighting for all this time. This is the party I would have made tea for, and now it's going to be in government again, and you're in a position to have been at the centre of it.
Oh, I'd still have to learn what's on page 45 of that document, and I just can't do it. So
do you also enjoy
I don't know if I would have been at the centre of it. I'm not sure I would put me, you know, give me a job.
Why not?
But I'd be really annoyed if I hadn't got a job. This is the thing that screws you up in politics, right? You don't want to do it, but then your mates getting promoted, so you're like, well, I need to get, it really screws with your head, sends people mad.
No, but that's just you being a functioning human being, I think, because there are some people in politics that just the sense of entitlement is what drives them on, regardless of their ability. And talented people who have more doubt do less well. Whereas doubt is a good thing.
Yeah, but you can't have it in politics. You can't, not at the top level of politics. You have to be absolutely tunnel vision, so confident in what that in your vision. It's not a normal human activity, and it's not a normal human trait, but that's what it takes to succeed in politics.
But you also did succeed, didn't you? It's just that perhaps you got fed up of it.
I'd learned everything there was to learn from it.
So now, is part of the benefit the fact that you can also live a bit of a life? You can go to Torremolinos. You can go on a P&O cruise.
Oh, my gosh. Do you not know about parliamentary recesses?
But without people coming up to you going, oh, MPs, on your holidays?
Oh, well, no, because nobody recognises you when you're an MP. I mean, they would recognise Rachel and Kieran, but I didn't really get recognised. The only time I'd get recognised is if people would go, did you see on GMTV?
Okay. Okay, so actually, going into politics, the best way to remain anonymous.
I'd never tell anyone. Honestly, it's like, I remember we were in Torremolinos, so I was with some MPs, got talking to people in this bar, and he said, what do you do? And I went, oh, you don't want to know, it's really boring. And he went, do you sell PPI? And I went, yeah.
PFI?
Yeah, very good.
A few of you holiday together.
Yeah, we do. No, you're not having the names. I mean, Jonathan Ashworth, Speaking Foxcroft, and Stephanie Peacock would never talk to me again.
Do you all take your partners, or is it like just the four of you?
Enough. They're like friends' holidays.
Yeah, I get that. You're allowed to have friends. Yeah, I'm not like...
So a combination, okay. You know. There's been many, many holidays over the many, many years.
And how many P&O cruises have you been on?
I went on my first one last year, but I've done a couple of posh ones. But I quite liked P&O.
Royal Caribbean?
It's a really bad name. Celebrity Cruises. It's an American cruise.
Yeah, I've seen that. With the big X as the logo.
Yeah, it's really posh on there. And everyone's American, so they don't recognise you.
So hang on. Okay, because I've never been on a cruise and I've got mates.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Okay.
It's amazing. The cruise is like a floating 5-star hotel, right? And I couldn't be bothered to get off. I was like, I don't want to get off, James, my husband. I just like, everything's free on here. I mean, obviously you paid for it. Can drink all day, we can eat. Why do we have to get off? As he's sort of like wrenching me.
Well, I agree. If you're just going to stop in, that's not the main places that are going to make me sound bad, but like, obviously if you stopped in Dubrovnik, I'd get out and see it. And I'm only saying Dubrovnik because I went on holiday there and I just remember the cruise ships coming in and out. But so where did the P&O one go to?
The Canaries.
Okay, lovely.
Lovely. Yeah, and Gran Canaria on my 50th. What? Are we doing a travel show?
Well, no, but it's interesting, isn't it? So Gran Canaria on your 50th. And what was that, like a week, fortnight?
It was a week.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And so how many... So I'm guessing it gets there in the morning, you get off, you can mill about, but you've got to be back on deck for whatever time.
Well, if you want to get off.
Okay. Or you can just sit there and...
Just have another pina colada.
And is it... I just imagine that like the queues for the buffet and the bar are always really long because there's loads of people on there.
No, really amazing food. In fact, you know when you go to functions, like political functions or weddings, it's like, oh, food's not great.
Yeah,
but they're like cooking for like 2,000, I don't know, thousands of people. It's amazing.
And
do you think you need to be talking to Thomas Cook rather than me?
No, because this is.
I didn't see it going this way.
No, nor did I. But you mentioned it, and I'm like, it resonates to me because I've always wanted to be on a cruise. So celebrity cruises. So what is better about that than say a P&O? And I realise it's going to be the price is going to reflect that as well.
Not massively. I mean, a bit. Probably the food is a little better and the wine is a little better.
And the cabins?
No, comparable. Same.
And are you the sort of person that will go and watch the entertainment or do you not bother?
I have done Some nights I do and some nights I don't.
Okay.
Are you going to edit this out?
No, God, no. This is. I've always thought the advantage of a cruise would be at night, being able to look up at the stars, like in the sea.
It's so, like, mindful to be just looking at the sea all day. And there's no mobile phone reception. Bingo. Mm.
Is that good or
no? No, it's good for you. It's good for you. Obviously, when you can get off the ship. I mean, if you're weird and want to actually see places, just drink pina colada on deck. It's healthy.
So Gloria De Piero's ideal holiday is pina colada.
Bit of Chardonnay. Full of sugar, but you know. I've stopped drinking Chardonnay. I'm a gin and tonic. By the way, it doesn't... Yeah. You can't see this. I'm drinking a no alcohol fake Aperol spritz while I'm doing this.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, very good.
And an Italian, so very much kind of a bit of heritage there. Is that, do you think that's... I mean, obviously lots of people drink Aperol spritz. How connected do you feel to your Italian roots?
More as I get older.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, but I'm not going to reveal my holiday. But anyway, I'm going to Italy. Yeah, I'm trying to do more room.
That's good.
Yes, I'm doing. I'm going to. But I don't know if this is like therapy, but I'm going to the place which was the beach resort where my dad went when he was a child, but he died nearly two years ago. And I don't know if that's sort of a bit therapeutic that I'm going there. I'm 51, never been there. But yes, I'm going, and I make my mates go with me.
That's a great, it'd be great.
Yeah. So I'll send you one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll be bumping into GB News viewers, but because it's where Italians go.
Oh, right, so very Italian.
And I can't speak Italian properly, so.
Okay.
So wish me luck.
Because there are parts, I went to Venice a couple of years ago.
Oh, it's amazing. It's like a fairy tale.
That's so good. And everyone speaks English. So you're like, you're fine, because there's so much tourism. But I went to Tuscany a few years before that. Classic New Labour holiday destination. No one speaks English there, and it was a problem.
So my mum and dad decided not to speak to me in Italian, but to speak to each other in Italian. So I can understand it, but I can't speak it.
Okay. Well, at least it's half helpful.
Yeah, and James always says, because they can understand me when I'm talking, but he says, I think you might sound like a low, like good moaning. You know, I'll just get words a bit wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's the case.
That's right. That's more than most. Oh, you just need to take a phrase book. Google Translate. That'll help. Well, this is great that this has become a holiday show. Just GB News have the space for a kind of wish you were here format.
I tell you what, P&O Cruises should be advertising on there, because that was breakfast, lunch and dinner that people wanted to talk to me about GB News on the P&O Cruise.
And are people... So GB News viewers then, when they approach you, is it... obviously, I guess they're kind of fans, because you wouldn't be watching it if you didn't like it.
Yeah.
So people are coming up to you saying, oh, I really like it, or people saying, oh, a particular thing you said about a thing, or...
They're just like, it's really... It's like something... GMTV is really comparable, although they're not comparable in any way. It's really like they feel like they're part of... They think it's their... I mean, we call ourselves a people's channel, but they think it's, you know, it's not just a line. This sounds like a line when I'm saying it, but they feel great ownership of it. They say they don't want any other news channel. They like the discussion and the debate. They just... It feels like part of a community of normal people. You know, whatever sort of metropolitan elite have in their minds about who is watching, it's just people that I used to represent in Asheville. Some of the best people who taught me the most in my life.
Well, what a great note to end on. There's so much more we could talk about, mainly holiday tips, cocktails, etc.
What's yours? Are you a pina colada man?
Oh, in terms of a holiday cocktail, definitely. But they've got too many in
Pina colada. So we've got Trotskyism, Andy Burnham, and Pina Colada in common. What a beautiful partnership.
The Holy Trinity.
Thank you, Mark.
That was brilliant. Thank you so much.
You're a great man. Great man.
Oh, mate. Cheers.
Well, there you go. What an absolute joy that was. And you get the sense that she has a lot of pride about where Labour is now and where it ended up. And I just thought, you know, I was one of those people that left the Labour Party the day Corbyn became leader and haven't rejoined. And I really, at the time, struggled to understand why anyone would stay when the party was in that state and led by someone who was so outside of the Labour tradition. But the way that Gloria puts it, and other people on the show have put it similarly, but she puts it in such a way that it makes me really understand the perspective of people who stayed a lot more. So that I really got something from that. And it's just a great laugh. It was so much fun. So that was an absolute treat. I've got some great guests lined up for the coming weeks. Thank you for all your messages. I am getting stronger and fitter all the time. Still learning to walk, which is... I just enjoy the process of learning how the body works. So that's a literal journey that I take every day to walk around and do exercises and things. But thank you if you've messaged me. It's very kind. And I will be hopefully, you know, I'm podcasting now, doing radio shows. I'm planning to return to stand-up in the coming months, I think. So that is a great thrill and slightly daunting, the thought of being on stage with walking sticks or whatever. So, but I think that's what I'm going to do. So anyway, there will be live shows coming shortly, as well as these continued Zoom ones. So I'm waffling now. So please leave a 5-star written review because it does help the podcast get up the charts, and share it far and wide. Share it on your socials, tell your family and friends, tell everyone you know, and I'll see you next time. Ta-ra!
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.